Writing and individual body expression and perception. Then, is it at all possible to write or talk about individual body perception? Is it possible to create within the social sciences a space for individual body perception and expression? According to Barthes, who has been trying to fight the idea of the necessity of a consensus in language, this is not a question, but an inescapable state of being, a thing a priori, one might say. In his autobiography, Roland Barthes by Roland Barthes, in 1990, he wonders how anybody could insist on speaking an incorporeal, general, political language. He concludes that this only works when those who view their own bodies are viewing it as being the same body, and he asks himself, then, why don't you do the same thing? And answers, precisely, no doubt, because I do not have the same body that they do. This quote from Barthes' autobiography sums up his views on the connection between individual body and language. As language refers to something which suggests sameness, common, general, incorporeal, and political, individual bodies express language referring to and revealing themselves as different bodies, quite the opposite. A couple of years ago, I gave a lecture at the University of Chicago, which was entitled Roland Barthes and the Problem of Unclassified Feelings. In it, I tried to show that Barthes considered language as a severe obstacle with regard to individual utterance. Barthes' work, The Zero Degree in Writing, which deconstructs various styles of writing, clearly showed that the myth of a written language presenting any individual feeling had to be questioned at all times. Barthes did not simply deconstruct ideologies underlying different genres in writing, but he very clearly posed that writing never could be the expression of individuality, since one selects from a system already fixed in a society and history. He could not consider genre to be other than common, general, incorporeal, and political, and therefore he could not regard it as objective. As language would resist modification coming from a single individual, the utterance of that single individual would remain unclassified or reduced to language. Barthes himself never wanted to be classified as belonging to one genre or another. At a personal level, he did not particularly care to classify his love for boys as homosexual. As the wave of coming out in the United States progressed, around the 1990s, however, the newspaper and magazine articles began to label him as a closeted homosexual and, consequently, as a representative of gay discourse in scientific text. He became incorporated in a history that classified his feelings in spite of himself and what he wanted. After my lecture, a young anthropologist came up to me and said pressingly, I do not know about Barthes, but I do not have any unclassified feelings. I learned that this person had been in psychoanalysis for 8 years. In his anthropological work, he tried to show the relevance of Freud's theories to non-Western cultures. Two things shocked me in his remark. First, I realized that for him, feelings, once classified, do not change as a result of experience. And secondly, that his need to classify any feelings, his or others, to him was a sign of good mental health. Furthermore, in spite of my reply that although he must have been a very happy man to have such well-classified feelings, this process might not work for everybody, he insisted that the close analysis by a professional intervention would of course reveal the nature of such feelings. I realized that our differences in opinion came from 100 years of historical misunderstanding, and that this misunderstanding was not only invented by Freud. As I suggested earlier, the Western construction of the body stands in the way of individual utterances. This does not mean that images of the individual body have never been constructed in history before. They have indeed, and in large numbers. Their implication, however, was never aimed at individual utterance, but, contrary, to support the political struggle of some individuals. An example of this type of image can be found in the work of Dorinda Outram. In her work, The Body and the French Revolution, Outram gives a brilliant description of the historical growth of this image of the individual body. Among other factors, she shows that medicalization of the body instigated this process. Concepts about health and illness changed, as did their cosmological interpretation. The cause of an illness was no longer to be found in the punishment of God, but in the individual body as a germ, an infection, lack of hygiene, and such. This, of course, had an enormous impact on how people came to view themselves and their communal surroundings. Outram describes the body concept before the French Revolution as a Christian view in which individuals were able to transform their biological life events, the history of their own intimately experienced bodies, into events of universal moral and spiritual significance. Medicalizing the body by separating its biological functions created a whole new discourse, which was not accessible for peasantry, thereby creating a vacuum for several classes within society. Medicalizing the body also meant isolation of the body from its socio-religious context. Although this knowledge brought about a higher life expectancy, it also brought about a notion that individuals could be held responsible for their own diseases, drawing a sharp distinction between the filthy peasants and the clean bourgeois. A distinction between educated and uneducated thereby constituted one of the main characteristics of what an individual body should be, that is, a person characteristic by education, self-responsible rule, and independent citizenship. This process of alleged education and civilization of the body also created a political, male-dominated discourse to which women could only adapt, or else be excluded from politics. Images which were designed to enforce the ideas of equality, liberty, and fraternity indirectly created a system that included totalitarianism in its grassroots. In the political arena, the individual body became more of a theatrical display, which was largely built on images that came from literature rather than from real life. Individuals were acted out, not expressed. According to Outram, in spite of its promise of universal freedom, the revolution turned into a state which excluded the majority of the population from its political field. Through the creation of a body culture, partaking in trance, which stripped the body of any real significance beyond the scope of immediate political goals, the revolution separated classes rather than individuals. A similar process developed in the early United States. Norbert Wiley recently published The Semiotic Self. He argues that constituting the Declaration of Independence as well as the Constitution, politicians already had an image of moral dignity in mind. The image consisted of an internal hierarchy, or, as Norbert Wiley explains, in this hierarchy of moral dignity, reason was the highest faculty, then interest, still rational but self-serving, and finally the highly emotional passions. The properties of these faculties relied very much on the notion of human nature differentiated by its reason from animals. It also entailed faculties which were seen as the profile of the white male rather than of any other part of society. This in itself, at last, offered no citizenship to Native Americans and African Americans, nor did it allow for women to vote. This idea on the faculties of human nature would not disappear and in fact were reinforced by the rise of social Darwinism. As we know, both Boas and Sapir made it their main purpose in life to fight this inherent inequality. Political trends like these, which seemingly entailed liberation for all civilians, all show images of the individual body coming from one communal source only, that of a political elite. They never result in political equality, and where individual independence is concerned, they result in an independence of a few powers holding elites, which have gained their independence by oppressing all others. Here, the terms individual and independence form a causal chain of a discourse triggering an ideological justification by suggesting that freedom and independence are to be accessible for all people. Many more examples of this type of discourses in history can be found, as was shown by Barthes' zero degree in writing. By classifying one group of individuals, the feelings of the others remain either unwanted or adjusted, with or without force, but always in a situation that the Dutch might call repressive tolerance. Analyzing discourses alone would never work, as according to Barthes, they are not representative for the individual expression. Neither is there a zero degree in writing, according to him, and therefore writing both implicates and creates styles and genres, which are quite similar to the processes described about the above-mentioned political images, or, as Udrem warns us, we might find socialized parrots rather than individual agents or speakers. At one time or another, they are always exclusive and only bear traces of individual expression. This is partly due to the notion that one would not create a separate space, a discourse, without the expectation, one of some duration and maintenance, and therefore communal repetition becomes its only means for immortality.